Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones, no relation by the way. On today's episode, we welcome Keisha Ajose Fisher, author of the story collection No God Like the Mother from Portland's Forest Avenue Press. Keisha was born in Chicago, raised in Lagos, Nigeria, and returned to the U.S. with her family in the early 90s. She's an Oregon Literary Fellow, and her work has appeared in The Alchemy, The Phoenix, and the Buckman Journal. Keisha's story, Mr. Uncle's Favor, was included in the 2021 anthology Dispatches from Anaris, Tales in Tribute to Ursula K. Le Guin. The story behind No God Like the Mother almost reads like fiction. The book was originally self-published in 2019 through Inkwater Press and won the prestigious Oregon Book Awards Ken Kesey Prize for Fiction the next year. Inkwater went out of business during the COVID epidemic, and the book went out of print. It was recently republished in a new edition by Laura Stanfill and Forest Avenue Press and is now widely available wherever good books are sold. Author Omar El Akkad, who won the 2022 Ken Kesey Prize, calls No God Like the Mother the sort of story collection that comes along very rarely, honest, precise, and meticulous in its emotional and physical detail. Keisha Ajose Fisher is a brilliant new talent, and No God Like the Mother, the beginning of an equally brilliant literary career. Please join us for our conversation with Keisha, which is already in progress. Well, Keisha, thanks for joining us today live in the KBOO studios. It's my first time back in this room since COVID hit back in March 2020, so I'm so thankful to be here with you.
Thank you, Ken. I'm thankful that I get to be your first guest back in the building. I'll take it, yes,
if anyone asks. Well, I saw you at your Powell's launch, and I figured, I got to interview her in person if I could make it happen.
Thank you, Ken. I was really quite nervous, so I'm surprised that you wanted to talk to me again after that evening. But it was a lovely night.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little, but okay. I want to start first with the origin of the book.
Okay.
So we mentioned COVID. No God Like the Mother was released about a year before the pandemic hit in June 2019.
Yes.
And you self-published the book with a Portland-based Inkwater Press, which sadly went out of business during the quarantine. Why did you go with Inkwater at the time?
So we just moved into my neighborhood, and there was a parade, the Multnomah Days Parade. And, we took the children in, were walking around, eating ice cream or something. I don't know. There was a booth by Inkwater. And there was this man, redheaded guy, Sean was his name. And he waved at us and said, come on by and say hello. And my husband said, they publish books. Because I've always written. I've known him for 20 years. I've always been
You were writing in
dreaming.
High school.
I've been writing since high school. But my dream of wanting to become an author or do it for a living was something that my husband Kevin knew. And so when we saw this booth, he said, let's go over there and talk to them. I said, no, thank you. I am not ready. And and a lot of writers say this, no one sees my work until I'm ready. And I was far from being ready. We ignored them then. We didn't go over. And we were at another festival not long after that same summer, this time in Southeast.
Inkwater back?
Yes. we're walking.
It's a sign, huh?
Yes. And my husband said, do you remember seeing them at the parade, the Multnomah Days Parade? I'm sure I tugged him along by the elbow and said, no, let's go. I'm not talking to them. It's not ready. And you wouldn't believe it. We saw them a third time that summer somewhere else, and I forget where. And Kevin said, I'm just going to get their card. Let's just go over, say hello, grab a card, and you can decide what you want to do later on. And that doesn't hurt, right? I took it when the newspaper, Southwest Multnomah, I'm going to get this wrong.
Oh,
the
it's
Gazette
a local,
or something, a local newspaper,
local,
right, the neighborhood paper, came out. My daughter was on the back page getting her face painted, and I'm sifting through it, and of course I'm excited that my daughter is on the back page. So we go by 10, 20 copies because we want to give all these copies away to people. Look at my daughter on the back page of our neighborhood newspaper. We were feeling like we were a part of this community now. And a couple of pages before I get to my daughter's page is a huge ad for Inkwater or again.
You're getting the message by this time, I think.
And I just thought, I need to... Some, the universe is trying to tell me something. This is what I always say. You know, I tell my children the same thing. When something comes to you a few times, the universe is talking to you. And so I thought I would give them a call. But I, you know, we don't call anyone these days anymore, right? We email.
Yeah, or text.
If my phone rings or someone calls me, I don't answer it unless it's, you know, I have three people that I answer for. My sister, my children, my husband. And maybe Oprah. If Oprah's name shows up.
Oprah, if you're listening.
I will.
Keisha will take
answer,
your call.
Right. Anyway, I emailed them. And then I hadn't gotten a response yet. But my husband and I were in a bar in our neighborhood. And the acquisitions person for Inkwater comes in, has a couple of drinks at the booth across from us, and says, I know you. And my husband says, yes, you do know us. She's written this book and she needs it out in the world.
You had met him before then?
He was at
one of the booths?
At one of the booths, okay. Right. So he was the redhead who we saw.
Oh, the redhead,
okay. Yes. And he said, reach out to me. I said, okay. I said, I emailed someone, but I will reach out to you directly. And I took a meeting, or he took a meeting, thankfully. And I brought the work into Sean Jones, actually.
There's a lot of
who
us.
You don't know. Right. Hopefully you don't know him. No, great guy in the neighborhood. And I had the conversation about what it'll all entail, right? It costs money to self-publish your work. I assumed that they would send me out running when they got the work. But I left it with them, and I was told to just wait. They'll pass it on to the editor. As I was telling some people yesterday, this was a really pivotal time in the process or the growth of this book. Having an editor on my side for the first time changes everything. But I do remember also being scared, because now, outside of the people who have been in the workshops with me and professors who have helped guide my work over the years, I had someone in the, you know, publishing world looking at it, and if his name is Andrew Durkin, by the way. So if Andrew had said or sent back my work as I imagined it in my head with giant X's, bold red X's on my work, I probably would have stopped writing. But I was very fortunate that I got someone with an open heart and an open mind to the kind of stories that I was wanting to tell with No God Like the Mother.
So you didn't even try to get it published with, say, a big commercial press?
I didn't. It happened to work. Exactly. Ah. So when I'm talking to people about self-publishing, I will reminding myself that what has happened to me isn't really how it happens to everyone. You know, I call it luck meeting, you know, opportunity meeting preparedness.
But it's an inspirational story.
I hope it lands well for someone out there who is sitting in their office like I used to, panicked about the publishing side of things, even though I love the process of writing so much. I'm doing my most favorite or favoritest thing. I don't know, which one is it? English is hard for me. But I'm enjoying myself in a solitary space, of course, but I'm writing. And it feels good to create stories and feel from the stories that I've created, right?
And you've got it out there so other people can read. I want Keisha to get to the next,
okay.
The
yes.
next part of this amazing story. And that's, again, self-published through Inkwater. Mm-hmm. But the power of the work won out. No God Like the Mother earned an Oregon Book Award, the 2020 Ken Kesey Award for Fiction, which is pretty prestigious. You beat out a strong group that year. Kimberly King Parsons, who I interviewed, Peter Rock, who's at Reed here, Karen Thompson Walker, and Gabriel Urza. That must have been a big boost, both for you and the book.
Listen, what were they thinking? Right?
I think they were thinking correctly.
thank you so much, Ken. I'm sure I fainted a few times when I heard that I was a finalist. I've said this before. I was happy there. I was content with how far the work had gone. I didn't even need to write anything else. I probably would, but now I'm more confident, of course, thanks to the success of the book. But for all of these amazing, talented, I call them the gatekeepers, but for trusting in my work, I know that I didn't tell easy stories, and I jumped out there as essentially, I am an unknown. No one knows me. No one knows Keisha, Jessa Fisher.
Well, they do now.
Well, I I hope that I earn this position that I've been placed in. I'm so grateful that they saw my work for what it was.
Yeah, well, one of those gatekeepers I want to talk about too.
Yeah,
Laura Stanfill.
Yes.
Portland's Forest Avenue Press. It's celebrating its 10th anniversary, by the way.
Absolutely. Congratulations. We're lucky to have them in our town.
Oh, we are. Mm-hmm. She plays such an important role in our literary community here in Oregon, Pacific Northwest entirely. Mm-hmm. And she's incredibly kind and generous. Mm-hmm. How did you and Laura connect and put out this new edition of the book?
You know, I will, again, that spark in out of no place. And it goes back to Inkwater, by the way. My editor, Andrew Durkin, was at an event or something, and I guess Laura was also there. And what I love about the literary community in this town is people speak up for each other. They're very supportive. We all want to see our colleagues do well. Everyone has your back. I will say that about Portland, Oregon, until the end of my times. And they must have had a conversation at this event. I don't know what it was, but I got an email from Andrew saying, oh, I met Laura. And then I got an email from Laura some time later. I met Andrew, who was your editor, and, do you mind taking a meeting with me? And we just met to talk because we're close by in my neighborhood. And at the time, I couldn't get the copies of this book out because Inkwater had closed. And I was talking to Laura about what my options were because I was going to the LA Times Book Festival and I needed copies of this book and I didn't have any. And we thought we would do just a print.
Print on demand.
Right, yes. But then Laura and I had a conversation that just blows my mind still. And she said, well, I think this book deserves to be out in the world still. I would love to talk to your agent. Let's figure out how to, bring it back to life. She didn't see my tears, but they were welling up behind my skull. And as soon as I got home, as soon as I shut the front door, I'm sure I collapsed in tears because I could not believe that this book that by chance won this award and then suddenly wasn't available. I mean, my life changed. I was getting calls from people I never, that I'd only seen on screen. I'd read their work and I was having a conversation with Yaa Gyasi and...
oh yes, you recommended her work last night.
I was suddenly invited to have a conversation, with Colson Whitehead. I could not believe what was happening. I did not deserve to be in that room, I'll tell you now, but I was still grateful. Thank you so much. Literary arts for making that a possibility in my life. I will remember it forever.
And Laura,
yes. And it opened doors for me in ways that I wasn't expecting. Of course, I now had an agent, and that's another funny story, but I acquired an agent after I'd won this award. So all the stories, I did everything backwards. I did it all wrong, and somehow it still worked. So I don't know that I have a leg to stand on with my children when I urge them to do only the right things. Do it the way you're told to do it, and your life will be fine. And I broke all the rules and somehow still got to this place that I never dreamed of.
Again,
possible.
I think it's the power of the work. So I'd like to get to the book.
Yes, absolutely.
There are 9 stories
in
No God Like the Mother, so each features a girl or a woman, most of whom are African. Many of the stories are set in Africa, mostly Lagos, Nigeria, but there's one story that takes place in Sudan, mm-hmm. A very sad one, mm-hmm. and a few in the U.S., Chicago, the Bay Area, mm-hmm. Portland. And that reflects your own experience, born in Chicago, raised in Nigeria, moved to the Bay Area to live with your aunt, and now Portland. That's a lot of culture shock. What was it like to go from the U.S. to Nigeria and back, and certainly at a young age?
I blame this odd, bizarre accent that I have, right? It shifts. It's all over the place. Of every place I've lived. Nigeria, I mean, I grew up with an American mother, and so living in a house with that accent, of course the children had some version of it, because this is our first teacher, this is, you know, who raised us. But then the more I traveled, you know, my first American experience is in Texas. And so that was...
Wow, what an interesting place to have your first experience here. That's like a whole different country.
It is exactly like a different country. And it's got its own language. And it just, you know, deserves to be on its own island somewhere. I know some people would love that, right? But it felt like I was suddenly dropped on a different planet. And I'm sure that affected the way I saw the world, because I was only 12 years old at the time. Then a couple of years later, I decided that I could not live in Texas. I love Texas for your food and the people now, but I left 2 years in to live with an aunt in California. And, you know, those were my formative years, right? Every experience shows up in this book really based on all of the places that life led me to. That my Nigerian upbringing, it'll never leave me. I was, you know, 1 to 11 while I lived there, but somehow it's still showing up as if, you know, I just landed in the States last week. And of course, my time in the States, I have to write about that as well. But it's all of those experiences put together. I wanted to showcase it in a very unique perspective. Thank you.
And that throws through. We can't, of course, cover all 9 stories here, but sure. I'd like to talk about a few.
Yes.
The very first in the book is the title story, No God Like the Mother. And I was amazed. In just 10 pages, you introduced several of the themes in the collection. So mothers and daughters, birth and death, endurance and love in the face of great hardship. The story's told so well and concisely, and reads almost like a myth or a fairy tale. It takes place in Nigeria among the Yoruba people, and you mention a Yoruba god, Olorun, keeper of the sky. Was it influenced, the story, by Yoruba mythology, maybe the stories you were told growing up in Nigeria?
Of course. I was saying the other day at a different interview that we didn't have a lot of television time when we were kids. It came on at 5 p.m. and was all of the television stations, they shut off at 9 or 10. So we didn't rely on television for entertainment. It was, you know, the radio or reading a ton or just our imaginations. And, you know, I like to credit, you know, we have a lot of talented Nigerian authors in the world right now. And I say it's because we, as children, had to rely on our imaginations for play. And you tend to go to various places. And my dad had an encyclopedia collection. And I would read that for entertainment.
I had one of those as a kid, too.
Really?
We had the World Book.
Really?
Did you have Encyclopedia Britannica or the World Book or something like that?
You know, my memory is not the best, as I've said. I will ask my dad and get back to you. But his bookshelf had just alphabetically the encyclopedia. And I would just I remember starting at A and just going through it, and B and going through it. And all of the
You did it in alphabetical
I
order.
I did, because that's how my mind works. I didn't know that I was allowed to zip to Z, right? But I, in that time, acquired lots of just, you know, useless information. And it only really comes into play when I'm watching Jeopardy with my husband. And he'll say, well, how do you know that one thing, but you can't remember, you know, what we had for dinner yesterday? So it's all of the stored information from requiring my imagination to entertain me.
Because you didn't have 24-hour digital like
exactly,
like,
as
like
our
we
children
do today.
Have now. Yeah, I didn't have. And, you know, we didn't have a ton of money. So it's not like we had toys to play with either. We made toys. You know, what's that game? The
Legos,
Jax,
or?
I think.
Oh,
what's it?
Oh, okay.
The American, you throw the jacks and marbles, or I don't know.
Oh, there's marbles and jacks.
Yes.
Yeah, two different games.
Two different games. Okay. Anyway.
So the Yoruba myths, though, was also something that you kind of learned from? And
we learned that from all of the elders and the storytelling. At gatherings at grandmother's house or wherever, someone would, at the end of the evening, I remember especially on New Year's Eve, someone would just stand up and start just singing and storytelling, and everyone listened. It's like it was an imaginary button pushed, and we'd pause and listen to them tell stories. And that's probably where that comes from. I enjoyed it, of course. It's, of course, a form of entertainment, but I didn't realize how much it latched onto my understanding of the way the world works and storytelling, and
yes,
how it would show up down the line.
Masterful storytelling.
Thank you.
Especially that first one. But at the Powell's event, someone asked you, what's your favorite story in the book? Mm. And you said The Silence Between Us.
The Silence Between Us.
Which you described as a love story that begins in violence, which doesn't really do it justice.
No.
But it's also a story of love persisting despite differences in class, wealth, and distance. And I think the only story in the book that ends somewhat happily, though ambiguously, why is this one your favorite?
I love the idea of possibilities being so unreachable, untouchable, but we still hang on to that hope, right? I've always believed that I could tell a story or write a full book and have it out in the world and doing well. I dreamed it. I didn't think it was possible, but I still wanted it. So I think in telling that story, it's, you know, this couple who, in all realities, right, they can never be together. But that love growing from when they were youths and finding each other again as adults and knowing that their lives have been pushed apart so far that they'll never come back to where they were, just, you know, is my wacky way of sharing what a love story looks like to me or makes sense in my head. But it really is, I think, that possibility of hope still leading everything was my reasoning behind this story.
I think you also said that the title of this story, The Silence Between Us, was the original title of the book, but of course you changed it to No God Like the Mother. What was the reason? It just seemed to encapsulate the stories in the book better?
I think so.
New title?
I think that the newest title, No God Like the Mother.
The current title.
Definitely, right.
The newest,
we haven't changed it.
The
it's still the same.
Title that,
the only
title since it's been published.
yes, it definitely encapsulates the fullness of the stories in the book. When I wanted it to be The Silence Between Us, I was writing, or the stories were written with the sense that the relationships that we have with our mothers, our fathers, friends, spouses, there's always some underlying quiet, right? We'll never quite know each other, right? I can't know you fully, Ken. You'll never know me.
Or my wife, who I've been with
right?
for 46 years.
Absolutely. These children that I grew with my own body and birth and have raised,
yes.
I will never know them fully. There's always that layer of quiet, of silence, that we are not allowed to bridge as human beings, no matter how close we get.
There's an inner life we don't have access to.
We don't have access to it.
Yeah.
And I wanted to, you know, touch onto that. So thank you for asking. No one ever asked about that.
The title?
Yes. Well, they ask about the title, but whenever I've said I intended to use The Silence Between Us, they never ask, well, why? So, yeah.
Both of them are good, but I think No God Like the Mother just kind of rings a little truer.
Yes, yes.
It just sounds a little different to me.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also based on a phrase I grew up hearing, and I'm lucky that I get to have it on
the Yorba translation in here.
Yes, I get to have that on the cover
Yorba.
This time.
Yes.
When I was self-publishing and had to pay for every word, I couldn't. And now it's on the publisher's dime. I got to put it on, thankfully. Orisha, biya kosi was a phrase I heard growing up. And not really knowing, you know, the meaning behind it, Orisha is another word for God. You'd asked about Olorun. That's what we call God, the God that, if we're naming one or presenting one name to a God.
It's kind of the primary God in Yoruba.
Yes, right.
But there are several others.
Yes. And I remember hearing that phrase when I was young and wondering, you know, well, why would anyone compare mothers to God? Because, you know, I was a child. I didn't know exactly how much my mother was doing behind the scenes, why we're surviving day after day.
And yet we wouldn't be here without our mothers.
And we wouldn't be here without our
mothers.
They're
very godlike in that respect.
Absolutely. And I do remember hearing someone say, you love God so much, but you disrespect your mother. Don't you know there's no God greater than your mother? It was that thing, that moment that stuck in my head all of these years. Swept back up when I was writing. I didn't know that I was going to write stories about mothers and our relationships with them. until I lost mine in 2014. And before that, I'd been working on a story about her and some of her friends in the 70s who were Americans who went to live in Nigeria and were young girls from Chicago who never really dreamt about anything bigger than Chicago, somehow found themselves in Africa. All black women starting lives out. And that's the story I wanted to tell initially. That'll be the next book. You know, first in their families to go back to Africa since the slave trade. Definitely weren't telling.
Now, the story, The Bride Price, takes place in Sudan, and through the experience of a young girl, Ma'a, describes the brutality, pain, and trauma of female genital mutilation, also called female circumcision. Mm-hmm. This practice was prevalent in Sudan. I read it was outlawed there, actually, in 2020, but it still persists. And according to a UN estimate that was made in 2019, it was performed incredibly on 9 out of 10 Sudanese women. Yeah. Now, I know that you've done some social work and still do. Did you talk with immigrant and refugee women who personally experienced this?
Absolutely.
How'd you research it?
Absolutely. I do remember when I lived in Nigeria, it doesn't happen there as much as I think outside of the city. It doesn't happen as much inside of the city of Lagos where I was raised, but we'd hear about it. It wasn't until I was an adult and working as a social worker with African immigrant women and refugee women that the stories were coming up. I was hearing, you know, whispers about it. And one of my clients asked if I knew where she should take her daughter to have this act performed. Of course, it breaks my heart. And I'm there to provide information and resources, and a good part of my work too, and it was a stressful job, but a beautiful part of it is providing a lot of the women who came to me trusting me with information about themselves and their bodies and their worries and, you know, how difficult it is to build a life in America from scratch when you're coming or you're escaping a war-torn country.
Right. In fact, they're in headlines even today.
Even today.
Yeah.
And my job is to, of course, provide resources. But I also had this lovely opportunity to have conversations with them as a woman, as a mother, and, you know, ask why. You know, why is this something that you want to do? And there are two sides to it, right? Some of them have grown up with it. A part of their tradition as
circumcising the boy in Jewish religion.
Absolutely, that's exactly what I was going to say. As much
it's not as brutal, though. You describe it quite clinically.
I needed it to be. You know, we're talking about the violence in the love story, right?
Yes.
if I can add violence to a love story, this required a brutal hand.
Right,
and,
to be
and
accurate.
Telling it to be accurate. Absolutely. And I don't know. I don't know that we'll ever get rid of it fully. I was thankful that in 2019, it was outlawed. And I joked, when I heard about it, I joked that someone encountered my book and read it and decided this thing must not go on. And thank goodness.
Wouldn't that be great? Congress.
I hope.
Now, according to Keisha,
we shouldn't do this.
Yes, okay.
I took a lot of pleasure. I'll tell you, the day I heard that news.
But like you say, it's so ingrained in the culture
that
it might take a long time
to
go away.
It's going to take a long time, and even if it's hidden behind the silence, because that's what tends to happen when people are so tied to their own beliefs, right? It's not easy to release it just because someone else says they're uncomfortable with it.
But I think it really says to us. Or shows us what fiction can do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've read about female genital mutilation, and the story, it kind of gets into your head more. You kind of really understand what it is, but also through the young girl, Ma, in the book, what she's going through, because it takes her right after the procedure. And then apparently after 40 days, she's somewhat healed and she's ready. She's a woman, considered a woman, so it's a rite of passage.
Suitors are now allowed to come.
Right, and can get a husband.
And bid. Oh, heartbreaking.
Yes, it is.
I, picked, and I picked specifically a 9-year-old girl for this procedure in this story. Because it is true. And sometimes they are younger. Yes, of course, sometimes they're older. But there is this sinister, I will get overly emotional about telling the story.
No, it's an emotional story to read.
Yeah. It's like there's a sweet spot, and I'm sorry to even use that phrase, where the girls are chosen, because you know you can mold a young girl as a man who is also the husband. It's easier to mold a young girl into the kind of woman you want her to be, right? Than having to go and pick a woman as your spouse to build a life with, and that breaks my heart. It began there, and you know, my storyteller mind, I, you know, zip around and then I find where I need it, where I feel comfortable sharing the story. And then, you know, I know that it's time to be honest about it. And that's all I did here.
And also it goes in with a lot of the themes in the book where a young girl, also anywhere from 9 to 11 years old, mm-hmm. kind of when you came back.
Those years.
They're kind of victims of situations they have no control over.
Absolutely.
They just have to endure and live with them. And it's not just the female genital mutilation.
Absolutely.
It's a number of things.
It's a number of things. And here it's abandonment by your own parent. It's, you know, trusting.
Or in this last story.
Yes.
Snow by morning.
Oh, goodness.
One of the worst situations for a young girl. In this case, the girl's name Basola. She's 11 years old here. She was born in Chicago. She's now living with her father in Lagos. Mm. Her mother returns for her, wants to bring her back to the U.S. The mother needs money for the trip, so uses Bisola as collateral in a drug smuggling operation. She's trapped in this home of this criminal couple.
Awful people.
Yeah, doing housework for them until her mother comes back. She's supposed to come back in a week, but she's not back in a week. At your PALS event, you said this is the only story in the collection based on your own life.
Oh, goodness. You heard that, didn't you?
Yeah. Did you or someone you know go through something similar? I mean, it sounds totally awful.
Ken, if we're being honest, yes. I've told the story before that my mother did, in fact, leave me with a couple...
drug smugglers?
Of course, so that she could travel to take the drugs to the States and then earn money to bring us back. I know that people in my family don't really like when I tell this part of my story.
Well, it's part of your life.
It is a part of my
life. But it's very difficult for other people to hear.
It is, yes. And having held that truth inside of me for so long, because even when my mother did return, I didn't tell her what happened in that house. And I think there was a lot of shame. I was embarrassed that even while I was being mistreated, I was embarrassed that I didn't show up as a perfect child for my mother's sake, because that's what she said, stay here, be good. And I had not been good. And I had a ton of shame in my head. Of course,
you kind
right?
of internalize it instead
as
blaming
an 11-year-old
situation
girl,
that you were put into.
Of course, and I didn't say anything to my mother when she came back. We left years later as an adult when I started processing it. I'd always written, you know, sort of about this poor girl who had that experience, but never wanted to see her as myself. I thought, you know, I've brushed it away in my head. It happened to someone else. But I took a huge chunk of that time in my life and that experience, unfortunately, and I built a story around it. Because I think the world also needs to know that even behind someone like me who smiles all the time, you'll never catch me not smiling. Every day feels like a sunny day to me. But I think
after that experience, most of us would be like you. You'd hope so.
I hope. Well, yeah. Either you
it's
go
not
going to
get much worse than that.
Absolutely. You go inward or you compartmentalize it as this one awful thing that happened in your life and go back to being the happy Keisha that everyone knows.
So how'd you feel after writing the story? Did it seem like a load was lifted? It was cathartic?
Of course. For that one, yes. Not all of my writing feels that way. That one, yes, because I'd waited until I was an adult to share the story with my mother. In fact, I told my sister first, and she said, well, you have to tell mom. And I think my mom, her heart would have been broken if she knew that she trusted these friends to look after her daughter.
Friends in quotes.
Friends in quotes. And even now, you know, I'm a 45-year-old woman, but look at the way I still tell the story. My mother abandoned me with people who hurt me, and I still talk about it as, oh, she left me with some friends. So I know the trauma is still there. I show up as a jolly person most of the time because my life is great. I can't complain. And I'm grateful for every good thing in my life now. But that's exactly why I tell the stories, because the trauma is, it's a part of me for the rest of my life. I have easier ways of dealing with them. I went into the work of social services because I thought, I got to give back. I survived. Look at what I survived.
Right.
How do I help someone else?
You have a special empathy for the women
Absolutely.
That you work with.
Absolutely. And that is a core part of this book and the stories in this book. And the other thing I'll say about that last story, Snow by Morning, it really was a test. And I'm you know, in hearing you say that that story affects people because it's a hard one. It's a hard truth to swallow about the reality for a lot of people in the world right now.
Yeah, you don't want that for any child.
And you don't want it for any child. But it's happening.
So why just be happy and cover your eyes and pretend that everything's roses?
I could have written a Keisha book where, you know, every day is awesome. But that's not the truth, the kind of truth that I want to tell about what humanity is, what the world is showing me. If I am one of the few of the billion people, how many billions of people are on this planet? If I'm one of the few that gets to live in this time, I hope I don't leave it having left lies behind. I hope I get to share as much as I discover about the world before I get to, you know, leap off this planet. And that's really my intention.
And you also, amid all the misery of the sadness of the tragedies in the stories, mm-hmm. there's hope, of course, and that's a big part of your personality. I noticed that dreams play a big part in No mm-hmm. God Like the Mother. In the character's times of this pain and hopelessness, Ma'a dreams of a secret garden in The Bride Price.
It's a safe place to hide.
And Bisola in Snow by Morning mm-hmm. dreams of her mother coming back for her. Very good dreams, nice dreams in Snow by Morning. And you have a story, Mr. Uncle's Favor, included in the anthology mm-hmm. Dispatches from Inaris, mm-hmm. Tales in Tribute to Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yeah.
And you've said, granted, I do not write science fiction, even though you were in the anthology.
Right.
But I did learn from Le Guin that it was possible to create new worlds from nothing and escape the real one anytime I choose. I wondered if writing for you has been kind of a refuge, kind of like dreaming on the page.
Of course. Oh, and I love that, dreaming on the page. Yeah,
Since high school.
When I had a teacher come to me after I'd written some, I'm sure it was terrible. If I read it today, I would cry. And say to me, well, after she'd read it in front of the class, oh, Mrs. Morey, who is no longer with us, may she rest in peace, but had read all of these stories in the classroom and said, oh, there's one more that I would like to read to you. And I'm new to the country. You know, I'm still telling, as you said, these mythical stories as a little girl when we're all 15 and 16 years old. The other kids are writing
about... To the kids at Albany High School.
Yes. Yes.
They have not had the same experiences
no,
as you.
They're writing about really nice shoes and really expensive gifts that they received for Christmas. And I was writing this, you know, wacky tale. And Mrs. Morey said, well, this one is really special. I'm going to read it. And I just shrunk in my seat. No, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. I shouted in my brain because that was the safest place for me. In my head, I couldn't stand up in that classroom with my bizarre accent and say, no, Mrs. You know, you definitely didn't talk to teachers that way where I grew up. And I sat back and she read it to me. I read it to the class. And to my surprise, I, you know, heard applause, and I thought, oh, now you're done. You're not allowed back in the school, without realizing that they were celebrating that moment. And I couldn't believe, you know, that a little story about $50 that I'd received for Christmas touched anybody when someone had just said they received $1,000 and they got a whole wardrobe change.
You must have realized you had a gift at that time. And Mrs. Morey, well, you have a section, an appendix at the end of No God Like the Mother, called A Tribute to Two Teachers. It's just about 2-3 pages.
Yes.
Where you thank her, another teacher named Miss Sims.
Yes.
And Mrs. Morey not only said that the story was phenomenal, she encouraged you to write more about Nigeria.
She did.
And in a major event in your life, she gave you an Ursula K. Le Guin book.
My goodness.
The Left Hand of Darkness.
My goodness.
As a model of how to do it.
If I have to tell you, if you know, people will say, if I can do it, you can do it too. I'm not kidding you. The way I dreamed up things and the chance that I get, all these chance meetings that somehow end up being woven together and have showed up for me, still blows my mind. That was the book. How was I being invited, you know, 30-something years later to come pay tribute to the same author who definitely changed my view, at least, on my own ability to tell a story. You know, you were talking about the dream sequences or the scenes that I have
right.
in a lot of the stories in here. Sometimes the safest place for me was in my dreams. You know, that quiet place in my head.
And you're writing.
And now I'm writing and talking to people using that bizarre accent, as I said. But the story, Snow by Morning, is in fact a chapter in the next book that I'm working on. And I, you know, meant to say, I wanted to put it in...
Oh, that's about your mother returning to Nigeria?
Version, yes, loosely based
okay,
on her
fictionalized.
And all
yes.
of these young Nigerian, I mean, American girls who decided to go to Nigeria and build lives there. Anyway, that is one of the chapters in the book. And I thought, let's add it here and see how this lands with people, because if it's too much, because I know myself, I if I'm going to, as I said, be honest and share from my heart what I really feel about a subject, I needed it. It's got to be. I have to go all in.
So that must have encouraged you too. The response, not just to the book, but that particular story.
Yes, and it was a testing the public to see if it's a story that's easy to swallow.
Did we come through?
Listen, you know, I can't even. Oregon, come on. Let's show the world how it's done, right? Let's share these stories. I am and always will be so grateful that it's been received the way I, of course, only dreamed it possible, right?
And like I said, an inspiration to anybody else
Anyone
who's sitting down to
yeah.
write. And even if they're self-publish, your work can be recognized
yeah.
and given awards and read, which is the most important
thing.
And read,
thing. Yes. Thank goodness for teachers. If I can just, you know, take a minute to share. I know that I have the tribute in my book, and I talk about it quite a bit.
That's a very moving tribute. And
but
I've had teachers like that, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Unchanging. I mean, Miss Morey, I see her face, I have to tell you, almost every day. I don't know that there's a day that goes by that I don't think of her short time in my life. You know, being raised in Nigeria, of course, teachers are an extension of your parents. They're highly revered.
Yeah, very
they
different
are,
in the U.S. now,
yes,
unfortunately.
Yes, of course. No, they are, of course, respected and feared. As much as you probably would consider one would be of your parents in Nigeria, where your parents have more freedom to control you than I think we have in this country. But that's a different story. We'll talk about that another time. In fact, our teachers were allowed to, you know, punish us with... Well, corporal punishment, we call it here nicely.
I even had that in junior high school
in America.
LA. The vice president, vice principal, had
Goodness.
A paddle.
Oh.
And he would paddle some big guys. Yeah.
Where was this?
This was in Los Angeles.
Goodness.
Yeah, it was Pastor Junior High School.
Well,
I'm sure it's a lot different now, but there was corporal punishment there.
Well, I do remember now that you say it, when I came to Texas and I was in middle school. I won't mention their names, but one of the assistant principal there too, his job was to, if you misbehaved badly enough, you're invited, and there's a paddle. I never heard of anyone who got it used on them, but I do remember hearing now that there was a paddle that was waiting for a lot of kids who I think deserved it.
Maybe it's part of the job description for assistant vice principal.
Yeah. That wouldn't happen today. If my son came home and said...
They would get sued.
Oh, my goodness.
But that's kind of a good thing, though.
Yes.
To get rid of the physical punishment.
Yes. Listen, I still have scars on my legs from when I was whacked by a teacher who I really believe now was having a bad day.
It's not really an excuse for that for a kid.
There's no excuse. And, yeah. But when we're raised in it, we're immersed in it, right? You behave as well as you would at home with your parents. When you are away from your parents, their eyes are off you, your only job is to be good.
Well, that might have been lost.
And at this point. Right. And at school, every time you're not good or you misbehave or you any for any reason at all, the teacher is allowed to punish you as harshly as your parents would. So, of course, we respected our teachers, but we feared them more.
But Mrs. Morey was a little different.
She was loving and encouraging. Years later, yes.
Right. Well, Keisha, when you hosted the Oregon Book Awards last year, and that was the first time back live since the pandemic, I think at the Armory here in Portland, you said to the finalists, you are here in this moment because you followed your dreams.
Do you see how the dreams keep coming?
We get to sit with you as observers of the beautiful art you created, but we are most fortunate to be witnesses as you watch your dreams touch people because you dared to chase them.
Oh.
So I want to thank you for talking with us today and thank you for chasing your dreams.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you. Please follow your dreams. It didn't come to you for no reason.
Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear the longer, unexpurgated version, the director's cut, you might call it if we had one, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, Jonesy, or just search for it on the KBOO website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guest today, Keisha Ajose-Fisher, author of the story collection No God Like the Mother, from Portland's Forest Avenue Press. You can learn more about Keisha, her work, and her upcoming events online at KeishaAjoseFisher.com. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, May 11th at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying...
Orisha, be ya kosi.